Right, and how are you? I'm still in the Western Cape.
Fantastic.
To balance it. Can I just check if all members have been able to connect as well as our guests?
Morning, Chairperson. To date, yes. We only have yourself and Mr. McKenzie. If we can maybe wait for 2 minutes, I'll make sure they join.
Okay, can we start at 5 past? Please also just confirm with me if we've got ministers and deputy ministers.
The minister, Abrams, has logged on, and we have an apology from the deputy minister, Kakana, the minister in the presidency, Mr. Mtembu, and the deputy minister in the presidency. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, we can then start in 9:05. I think by that time we should have adequate numbers to proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
The Minister of DCDT, as well as fellow South Africans who are following us from different platforms. Today, honourable members, we are meeting as the Portfolio Committee on Communications in the National Assembly. Of course, saddened by the news of Mayor Buntlenyana Mkhali, who's a former councillor of ICASA, but also known to have been in the sector for some time. That includes having been with the department. And of course, the role that she played in assisting the Minister of Communications then, the 2010, the broadcasting side of things. So we're saddened by a passing on. I'm sure a number of honorable members would have seen this in the social and media space that she has passed on. That would have been the last candidate that we interviewed in the ICASA councillor's appointment process for this new term. So I think as a committee, we should still send our condolences to the family, friends, and the sector itself. So I just thought I should at least officially, on behalf of the committee, put this on record. Honorable members, given the agenda for today and the apologies we have received from Minister Mtembu, Deputy Minister Swea, and from the side of the MDDA, because they would have come to speak for the entity. We have the Minister of DCDT, Minister Honorable Davin Abrahams, who would do the overview before we allow ICASA to make a presentation. We will then take the presentation from MTTA thereafter. But for purposes of managing today's meeting, we will take engagements on the ICASA presentation and the overview of the minister immediately after the presentation, so that if there would be other pressing matters that they would need to deal with, we are able to list them and we continue with the MDDA presentation on COVID-19. The rules remain the same, honorable members. We'll just remind each other once again that for our meetings to run smooth, we just need to respect the rules of the meetings, speak to the chair. They sound basic, but it's important to do that so that we are ordered in the meeting. I do know that we are experiencing connectivity problems in different areas, mostly linked to the energy problem, which is the load shedding. And therefore, members may struggle to keep their cameras on from time to time when they speak. If there's that problem, please do give an indication so that it would not appear like you are not complying. Because for the broadcasters who are following this discussion, they usually would want to see the members or the guest or whoever is speaking at the time. But for all other members who are not on the platform, as it's the norm, we'll keep cameras off as well as our mics muted so that we can give space to the speaker on the platform. So with those words, honorable members, this meeting is officially opened, and that I'm sure honorable minister, you are ready on your side to give a brief overview. Thereafter, would give ICASA, given that members would have received the presentation, 20 minutes maximum, to highlight those areas that you'd want to highlight, especially if there are updates that they would want to bring to the attention of the committee. Thereafter, we'll then take a discussion on the ICASA. We'll then move to the MDDA, and I will clarify on the MDDA how we are handling that report when we get to that point. Minister, are you able to hear from the side? Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all honourable members and participants, councillors, and everybody in the meeting. Chairperson, we thank the opportunity to come and make a presentation on the work that's being done by the authority in relation to some finalisation of the sport broadcasting rights, amongst other things. Just to make mention to few things in terms of the process that we have received or we have been involved in, that as we are all aware that ICASA did brief the portfolio committee on the progress, and of course key to that was the description of the legislative background motivating for the review, the purpose and objects of the regulations, which therefore the process followed, the proposed list, dispute resolution and penalties. The authority informed the committee that the reviewed regulations will be presented to the minister on the 12th of March and would subsequently be gazetted. The committee did express concern as to whether the reviewed regulations had received enough public participation and suggested that ICASA halt the presentation to the minister. However, the committee was advised that this was a legislative process and could not be halted. Following that, ICASA then wrote to the minister on the 1st of July attaching the draft Sports Broadcasting Services Amendment Regulation 2020 and an explanatory memorandum in terms of Section 45 of the ECA, notifying the minister that intends to further consult on the draft regulations before finalizing the process. What was not attached on the letter was the list or the reasons for the new we had discussions before. We therefore indicated you need to be finished with the authorities' position paper and conclusions, and of course the reports from the international benchmarking that was undertaken by the authority before the final and informed decision is made. We also require that ICASA must simplify or tabulate the regulations in relation to the original, amended, and final regulations currently being published as the process has been completed and well conducted. Chairperson, I'm mentioning these things because these are the things that have found expression in the media and the portfolio committee, the portfolio committees of sports, arts and culture, and communications had had concerns on. We are coming here to therefore allow the authority to make a presentation, and we still, again, saying that hence the regulation requires the inputs from the Minister of DCDT and the Minister of Sport, Arts and Culture. They must engage, and therefore it's important that also we have a working committee on creative content issues where we have established a team of deputy ministers that must collaborate on the work that is being done. That would therefore make things easier for the authority to get feedback so that we move along with everyone as we engage the industry as policymakers, and then we make the regulations, the enforcement of regulations to be an easier one. So, Chairperson, with your permission, thank you. Those are the basic things that we are making an overview on. And of course, we congratulate, because it's your first time meeting the council. So congratulate the councillors that you appointed, and you have them there, and work is continuing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Would now hand over to ICASA. I think the minister would have done the congratulations, and I think the committee is also happy that we have the complement of ICASA sorted, and there's a leader of the delegation, I'm sure, from ICASA will hear from the chair of ICASA on how they are approaching the presentation. However, I must remind you that we are allocating 20 minutes for the presentation maximum, so that you can prioritize the areas that you want to highlight to the committee. I'm sure the ICASA is ready.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I hope you can hear me.
Loud and clear.
Thank you very much. Indeed, it's a great honor to be here. We have a voluminous presentation, of course, based on how the invite was crafted, but we do appreciate the time constraints that we are currently confronted by. So as a result, we will just deal with, the first part of the presentation, which is about the first 9 slides or so, which speaks to an overview that the minister, succinctly gave around sports broadcasting. We will then just jump to touch on the issue of community broadcasters, since it's also a topical issue, both on sound and on television. And then we will give quick updates on the spectrum licensing process. So I hope in that way we will then have to skip other aspects of the presentation, which of course we take as read. And if there are questions, we are more than glad to respond to. So it will be sports broadcast. It will be just to touch a bit on the ongoing community broadcasting endeavors, as well as an update on the spectrum licensing process. And without any further delay, I would then like to call on Councillor Palesa Kadi, who is the council chair person for this particular committee. She can just, take us through briefly the work done to date. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson of ICASA, and good morning to Minister and Chairperson of PCC and members and colleagues on board. Mine is to really touch on the update and briefing and also ask the committee that the minister has provided the most recent update as to where we stand insofar as the committee is concerned. Just to give a rationale or purpose in terms of the listing of sports, this relates to sports that have been identified as national sporting events, as well as minority and developmental sports. I think those are the three components that we need to focus on, but also look into the objectives that are there insofar as how then we have determined the criteria which we have shared with the minister, but the new component of dispute resolution. I think members are very aware, and the public in particular, in terms of comments and also clashing views insofar as how do free-to-air and including subscription, the access to sports is becoming an issue and a need for us to come and find ways of balancing that so that we can have a wider audience reach. There's also the criteria for listing. There are components here that are three, seeking so that we can be very organized in how we project the regulations. There's the confederations aspect of the sports, which reflects on the national team. There's the semi-final and the final national knockout competitions, and there's also the opening game semi-finals and confederations. I'm going to emphasize a bit on this because of what we saw on the Rugby World Cup. We have viewed and with much positivity that both the SABC and MultiChoice managed to give access to South Africans to watch the rugby final without the completion of these regulations, meaning that there was a conclusion reached and fairness in terms of how they have dealt with each other as very critical parties in broadcasting the sports of national interest. Now, these were the previous listed sports. We can go to the to the proposed ones. Next page. What you find that there's netball, which has featured, which is number 9. There's also TAFISA, which is World Sports for All Games. TAFISA includes the component of indigenous games. And this is a developmental prerogative that council and the authority is looking into. The third part, which is not here, is the PSL, which was previously in the proposal, but is currently out. Remember, PSL is Premier League teams, your Kaizer Chiefs and Sundowns, and these are not national sports teams. They are Premier League teams owned by individuals for commercial and other reasons. So they do not feature in the formulation of these regulations. Next. So we have further consulted post our engagement with some of the broadcasters and the sporting bodies. But also what was key is to how we have had engagements with our interested parties beyond sporting bodies and their interest in the matter. So the consultations, as Minister said, are ongoing, and we are nearing completion now as we will be soon, upon finding each other, publishing the second draft based on the reviews, based on what and how we have engaged members interested. So the collaboration is needed in every step that we take. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Mula.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Councillor Kadi. We will now jump to slide 40. Slide 40, and the CEO will just quickly take us through the two slides on community broadcasting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning to the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and to the Honourable Members. Chair, just to outline briefly an update in respect of the Community Broadcasting Services process, the slide that we have outlined on slide 40 just gives an indication of the number of community radio stations that have been licensed to date. In total, there is approximately just under 200 community radio stations that have been licensed across different provinces. This was prior to the imposition of the moratorium that the authority had imposed in 2016. As we move on to slide 41, in 2019, we came up with a new regulatory framework for the licensing of community broadcasting services for both sound, being radio, and television. And the intention really was to deal with all the challenges that have beset the sector. And in terms of this new regulatory regime, we had outlined the process through which we will take applicants through a pre-registration process. And as we issue that pre-registration notice, we would also then list all the available frequencies in the different municipalities. We would then allow applicants who have been registered as non-profit organizations for at least 2 years to apply. So any entity that wishes to apply to be a holder of a community broadcasting service license must at least have been registered for 2 years. And then the process would then further allow the authority to consider all the pre-registration notices and make a decision within 90 days. And where an applicant meets the requirements, then the decision would then be communicated to that applicant. So the last slide on this issue, which is slide 42, confirms that we published a notice for the sector to apply for pre-registration in November last year. That closing date was extended until end of June. We had received by the closing date in excess of 90 applications, and we are currently in the process of reviewing all of the applications that have been received. It will certainly be an extensive process given the magnitude of the applications that have been received. But we hope that we will be able to make a decision within a reasonable period of time. Chair, I think that concludes the section on the community broadcasting update. The last slide is just a list of the municipalities in respect, or is just a list of the frequencies according to provinces in respect of the pre-registration notice that have been published and the applications that have been received. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Thanks for that. I think we will now move on to slide number 45, which speaks to issues around the spectrum licensing. And in a nutshell, I think it's common cause that the minister published the policy directive on the 26th of July last year, and as dictated to by the ECA, the authority then had to consider the policy directive on the licensing of spectrum, and considering the climate with which, you know, the spectrum is being licensed under, the authority was then minded to publish what we called an information memorandum, just to take, you know, the public and all interested stakeholders into our confidence on how we really would envisage to craft the licensing process. That was done. The closing date was the 31st of January. And there has been processes around the valuation of fair value of spectrum, as well as, you know, a notice being published to that effect, outlining the process to be followed. Now, I think it's just important to perhaps share the latest update emanating from a very intense and well-considered engagement of council yesterday. So where we stand is that owing to, you know, to a number of dynamics which have of course happened and were beyond our control. It could be issues around COVID, emergency spectrum relief, and so forth, where the authority needed to then focus its energies on temporarily releasing spectrum. This has a direct bearing on the date which was committed for December 2020 for the industry auction process. So as a result, we need a period of about 2.5 to 3 months maximum to just, you know, recoup lost ground. And this would then mean that the industry auction will happen by no later than March of 2021. The two invitations to apply, which is the invitation to apply for the WON as well as the invitation to apply for the, you know, the IMT, the industry spectrum, will be out by no later than the 30th of September this year. So indeed, there is certainty that we are bringing that the ITA's boat will be out by end of the month. Now, in the intervening period, it is important to note that given, you know, the new normal and the dire impact of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, on many industries, banking, you know, our own sector, mining and so forth, we would like to open more like a last window, just a holders to inform the authority between today and the 16th of September on what else do they think is important for the authority to consider before it finalizes the ITAs. It's a very critical and stakeholder-centric posture, because once the ITAs are out, it will be very difficult, if not impossible, for the authority to then, you know, amend or try and withdraw. So this is literally the last window where representations in a written form can be made to the authority outlining the impact of COVID in a licensee or a prospective licensee as business or operations in their spectrum management regime and so forth. So I think this will then take care of the updates on the spectrum licensing process. It's between today, the last window, and the 16th of September, where final inputs in whichever form can be made, because we realize that as a responsible regulator, it would be very miscalculated of us to finalize ITAs when all these other processes of IM and everything else happened pre the COVID era. The next slide will be 49 on the TV white spaces. Thank you. So in a nutshell, during the time when the authority was given temporary spectrum to respond to the COVID pandemic, around about the same time, we then gave some industry players space to can, you know, utilize the TV white space environment. Now, a more systematic process is underway. It's part of our annual performance plan, and the effective date will be the 1st of April 2021, which means between now and then, the authority will be undertaking a number of processes as outlined on the slide, notice to interested entities to apply, there's a pre-qualification stage, there are issues that the authority would need to consider, working together with all other institutions like the CSIR and so forth. But it is an annual, it's important to note that it's an annual target which we can be held accountable on at the end of the financial year. We know that the current release brought some much needed interest and somewhat impatience, for lack of a better word, that why can't the authority conclude the process? But it's something that we have earmarked and we are dedicating ourselves to conclude within the current financial year, as we had initially planned. Honorable Chair Maneli, I hope this takes care and we have not gone beyond your 20 minutes, but it's just a high-level overview, really, of the most pressing regulatory processes. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair and the team of CASA. May I invite members who would want to engage at this point?
Madam Chairperson?
I think Secretariat will assist me because on my system here, I don't see the participants, even though I've tried many times to look.
It was Ms. Van Damme and then Mr. McKenzie. That's what I see, Chair.
Any other member would want to contribute?
Kubega.
Honorable Kubega. Okay. In that order.
Thanks, Chairperson. Sorry, once again, I think my Wi-Fi at home has been throttled, so my connection is not great, so I won't turn my video on. Chairperson, this issue that I'm about to raise, while it has sort of been resolved in the sense that the appointment of the councillors to fill the 6 vacancies has now happened, but what we can't do is sweep under the carpet what happened during that process, because it resulted in a delay. So the minister is here today, and I would like to know from her whether she will apologize. I would like a pretty clear answer to that. Will she apologize to this committee when on 2 occasions we followed the letter and the intention of the ICASA Act regarding the appointment process? And on 2 occasions, not only did she embarrass herself, she embarrassed Parliament, she embarrassed this committee. And if nothing else will be done, the very least that she can do is say, I am sorry. What I did was wrong, and for it, I apologize. And she cannot claim that she did not do anything wrong, because then she went back, corrected her mistakes. So I would like to know if she will apologize. And then to ICASA, saying that the delay of the release of spectrum, is a result of impatience and people must be patient, and being so flippant cannot be accepted. This process is already way, way overdue, and it is unacceptable that it has once again been delayed. Chair, I want to know what are the proper reasons for why it has been delayed again? And why is there such flippancy when speaking about it, when it is clear what the delay in doing so has resulted in South Africa? If this process had been dealt with, we wouldn't be in a situation now where during lockdown, matric students are now being given IDTVs because they haven't been able to perhaps use internet access to study. I think the lack of proper internet access has been highlighted during lockdown. So what are the reasons for the delay? Those are my 2 questions. And the question to the minister, I'd like a very simple answer. Will she apologize? And then would like the apology
she will not apologize. She must tell us why she doesn't think she should apologize to this community. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mackenzie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning to you. Good morning to colleagues. And good morning to the Minister, not necessarily in that order. Thank you very much, Dikosa, for the presentation. Minister, while we have you on the platform, there's a lot of noise in the media about your husband and his connections to the South African Post Office, South African Post Office Director, the Independent Online has their Special Investigations Unit looking into your husband's activities. And there's lots of noise around your husband. And I really don't want to get personal on this. But Minister, can you once and for all, because there's a lot of noise swirling around this, and I feel it's detracting or deflecting from the important work of this portfolio and the work of your department that needs to be done in order to take this country forward. Minister, can you once and for all confirm that your husband does no business with any of the entities of this department, including the South African Post Office, ICASA, the WOAN, or anything else? Your husband has no business connections with any entities under your department. I think this is a unique opportunity for you to express yourself clearly on this to Parliament, Minister. So if you could answer that question for me, I'd appreciate that, and especially relating to this morning's story in Independent Online. Perhaps you must go talk to your Chinese friends who own 20% of that paper. Maybe they can influence the editorial policy. Then just to ICASA for a minute, thank you for the presentation. Can you tell me, in terms of the rapid deployment guidelines or the policy directive that the Minister sent you around 2 months ago, how far are you down the line on that? How many submissions did you receive from the public on those guidelines, especially around putting masks in people's gardens and the invasion of their property? How far are you down the line? And can you give us some clarity on how you see the direction those rapid deployment regulations are moving in, and specifically timelines? Then, if I can just ask, in terms of the spectrum auction, we've seen a lot of delays in rolling out or finalizing the broadcast digital migration project, moving people off their analog stations and freeing up that 700 band. When from the outside looking in, I'm sure you're aghast at the speed at which this is taking place. What is your opinion on the status of BDM, and when do you see this being finalized that you will actually be able to offer those the spectrum in the 700 bands up for auction? Similarly, you've referred to the WOAN. In terms of the structure, the actual ownership of the WOAN, do you have any information on that? Have you put out any documentation around that? Have you had any applications come in? And who is going to adjudicate that? Is that going to be ICASA or the ministry? Then directly speaking to your presentation, once your ITAs are finalized, do you then, given that you've taken everybody's comments, hopefully taken everybody's comments into account, do you then give your ITAs to the minister or the ministry first to have a look over before you publish it, or do you go direct to market and publish it without doing that? Thank you. That's it for now, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mackenzie. Honourable Kubeka.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks very much. Let me firstly apologise on the side of not opening the camera. I'm having a problem of there's a load shedding actually this side, Chair. Greetings to the Minister, to the members, officials who are present today, and to welcome also the ICASA as the new councillors. Welcome. Indeed, I hope now our frustrations needs to be cleared now. Chairperson, I'm just having only three questions that I would like just to ask to ICASA. Can I check with ICASA that was there any continuation of work whilst there was a shortage of filling those vacancies of other councillors? Can I just check to say those councillors that were there, were left, did they continue with the job whilst they have that shortage? Can I just check also with the ICASA to say on the side of the rollout of spectrum, what will come by the end of November, when we know that this is the time frame that has been given to that temporary spectrum that they have been issued? Also, what I would like to understand, is there any possibility for these young players, junior players, who are having an interest to come in on the side of an industry? Is there any space that they can get, or we are focusing only on the big guys on the side of the industry? Thanks, Chair. We'll come back.
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka. May I just check if I may have left a member who wants to ask a question now, before I hand over to the Minister and the ICASA team? If not, at this point, I think as you respond, Minister and the Chair of ICASA, just also speak to the issue that relates to temporary spectrum, which was allocated and had timelines. I'm raising this because in some of the roundtable discussions we continue to have with the industry, this matter has been raised, where we probably need to balance between recognition of the investments made as a result of that vis-a-vis a process that should not be seen to have advantaged others. The shift in the deadlines that were agreed to affect that process, and how the regulator will handle that as you respond to the questions that the members would have asked. I'm not sure whether, Minister, you'd want to come after or you would start to speak. But the discussion is really yours.
Thank you so much, Sir Person, and thank you to honourable members for the questions. If I were to start with the last one, Chair, that you just made, and a comment on inflation to spectrum timelines and the temporal relief that we provided, it's an operational matter, therefore I'll refer that to the authority to then respond about what are the implications or whatever that was done. I must just highlight that it was important for the department and the authority to provide temporary spectrum, as we had foreseen lots of traffic that was going to be experienced by citizens and everybody that uses telecommunication services. And therefore, because of that, as we're moving people to lockdown, trying to encourage them to remain productive at home, key to that was enablement of remote working. And that remote working really required that we help the operators boost their capability. I am aware that the authority did provide a report in terms of outlining who are the people that got the spectrum that applied for it, because they called for anyone who has interest and others did not bid for it. And that I'm making reference to that because the person raising the fact that maybe it could have had a potential of advantaging and disadvantaging others. So I am aware on the report that I got from the authority that a call was made to all that are interested in applying for the visa. Talks about, she would like to know, I would like to apologize to Ikasa if Minister is not the action. I know the person as we continue to protect the media that I also read, the minister is, they're going to comment that the minister has taken this parliament. So I would advise it still like the something that was untoward and that the minister is respected for the committee and the national assembly, that she must follow those processes. And the person with all due respect to the EU referring matters to other committees, therefore, I expect you to follow those. We can also follow the legal route if they know the minister that is an unconstitutional route. The second question on by Honorable McKay. On the noise on media about the minister's husband. Unfortunately, I cannot record everything the media said. I'm not responsible because I am not the source. But Honorable Mackenzie raises an important thing to say, even today, there's an article. It's interesting that on the, as he reads the article, he does not state what the minister said as her position against any involvement of family members in the work that has been done by the department. And on that record that they have came, because this is what I'm referring to, that is in the same articles that have been written, it is stated that the minister stated that in the meeting. Therefore, I would have assumed a person who raised that with that understanding, without just seeing the minister in a corrupting, because there's nothing in the article that we're referring to that says this is what I did. What is in the article, it talks of a member resigning, a member, and again, those matters, as I had said earlier, will come and put the, praise the portfolio committee on them. But just to say, if members, as they continue to read and get more evidence, probably, on all these allegations, because it is our collective responsibility to deal with corruption. And as the Minister of Communications sitting here, as citizen of South Africa, I fully abide by that, that any corrupt people must indeed not be part of our system. So if the members feel like they have evidence on these things, I welcome it, as I have said to the same media that has written about them, to say we do not know of any of the things that they are talking about. If they have evidence or whatever, they must go and lay charges with the law enforcement agencies, both now Strategic and Front. And unfortunately, Honorable Minister, I really do not have time to be analyzing the media articles. My responsibility is huge over the 10, the 11 entities that I'm responsible for, and my energies are spent on that, which is why when media ask questions, we respond immediately. But of course, as I said, I'm not a journalist. I don't write papers. I'm not even the source. So I will not be in control of what the media says. But the point that I'm making, Honorable Members, the members that feel strongly about me being a proxy of my husband, because I don't have capability, I assume, a proxy of my husband, that whether it's appointment or it's business, that he must be in the sector, because I cannot take those decisions, they must really follow the process that they need to follow when they declare one incapable. And, of course, dealing with my husband as a citizen of this country if he has done anything that they are claiming. We are on record again, Honorable McKenzie, as we have seen in the articles that we are reading, that Mr. Abrams went to an external saying he's taken the matter to the law enforcement agencies to say, let this be investigated so that these people, these ugly sources, actually must then unmask themselves. Because I believe when people whistle blow, they do that to protect the state and expose corruption. It doesn't help that we refer to people that are writing and are giving information. In the spirit that wants to promote good governance, it's very important that we become transparent and take charge of all these ills in our society. If we are to defeat corruption without us politicking about it or paying media stance on it, that they have not solved anything. People have not been taken to jail in many cases, but media has continued to write. So I think our intent is to make sure that when the allegations start as those, indeed we act, we refer this matter to law enforcement agents, and we take interest in getting the evidence on them. The last question that Honorable Martin asked, or no, it's not the last one, again, is Mr. Abrams doing business with any of the state-owned entities? All the entities has told me, including Post Office and Post Bank, whom and records to the same media houses disputed the allegations by the journalists. Unfortunately, I don't process procurement, I don't register companies, so I wouldn't say with it Nancy or Nancy and Nanko on each way. My responsibility as a shareholder and a policymaker is to make sure that the policies that we develop find expression and that they help the entities to deliver on the socio-economic objectives that they must really focus on. I don't check which companies do that. So if members have, as they read, they can make follow-up with the journalists. They said they have dossiers, they have documentation, they have everything. I guess in the spirit of PIA, you can utilize PIA for journalists to come and give you the information so that you can act accordingly. As I said, according to my own knowledge and the information provided by all the entities, there is no business that Mr. Abrams is doing in my portfolio. My opinion on BDM and the DTC delays, the person who were here, which is Sasa last week, we made a presentation on it. And therefore, I would like to say the committee requires another opportunity for a briefing that I would really doubt that there will be an update after a week. We will come back and give the committee the agenda today focused us on ICASA and the quarterly performance by the department. On the record assignment, in terms of how many submissions that we have received, I don't know. They don't come to the minister's desk. They get processed in the department and the minister gets to be provided with in terms of the report. And as the member is aware, the closing date was yesterday. So even the department is still processing that administrative work. The CASPA will then respond on the other questions in relation to spectrum and all those. Once more, thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I give to the Chair of CASA, who will indicate how they are approaching answers.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson Maneli and Honorable Minister. I think the first question of Honorable Van Damme, Honorable Van Damme did not hear me properly. Absolutely. I used the word impatience when I was talking about TV white spaces, and I even contextualized why. I did not refer or use impatience in relation to the spectrum licensing process. So I would just like to clarify that. And even with TV white spaces, it is because our annual target of finalizing regulations and giving full regulatory life to the issue of TV white spaces has a deadline of end of March 2021. However, there have been a lot of calls by certain players in the industry saying ICASA should do this quicker, should find ways of doing it quicker. That's all I was referring to. And having said that, during the COVID period and so forth, we did give certain players some space to participate in the TV white space arena. So with all due respect, Honorable Van Damme, I did not refer to impatience under the spectrum licensing process. There was a question by Honorable McKenzie on the digital migration. I believe the minister has touched on that. Rapid deployment, the minister has touched on that. The one, who's going to adjudicate? The one will most likely, I will use the word most likely because the final methodology and articulation of how this will be done will be in the ITA. So to play it safe, I will say it will most likely be done through what we call a beauty contest. Now, the authority has handled beauty contests before. The free-to-air license for television, we attempted it in 2016. There was no successful bidder. We ran the process again, and then a license was issued to a successful bidder last year around February or March. So the authority has adjudicated by means of beauty contests before, And if the one is to follow that particular approach, the authority is empowered by law to be the licensing agency on behalf of the people of South Africa, will then be the ones responsible for this particular one process. Will we take the ITAs to the minister first? No. The minister's role ends with a policy. Section 35A of the ECA then compels the authority to consider the policy by the minister, and then we consider the policy, and as a result of that, we can then issue invitation to apply and run the process. At this juncture, it cannot go back. The only intervention that the minister can have is through policy. So a straight answer to the question of whether the minister will be vetting the ITAs, the answer is an emphatic no. Honorable Whip Kubeka asked the question, was there any continuation of work while there were, you know, about three councillors left? Yes, there was, Honorable Kubeka. Work continued across, you know, from a governance perspective, a regulatory perspective, work continued. But I think it is also then common cause that three out of nine can only, you know, do what they can to the best of their ability. But a direct response is indeed yes, ICASA did not collapse. There were meetings of council held. There were regulatory projects conducted. There was managerial and governance oversight conducted by the remaining councillors. And of course, there are minutes of meetings to that effect. Thank you. Now, there's another question. What will happen? And I think this question of Honorable Whip Kubeka and the chairperson, Honorable Maneli, around this temporary spectrum and what will happen. I think it's important that we also just place it on record. The temporary spectrum was issued, you know, the process was informed by regulations which were developed in relation to this whole COVID lockdown situation. We said industry players will return the spectrum 3 months after the termination of the national state of disaster or the 30th of November 2020, whichever comes first. Now, the national state of disaster has been extended month to month since July or so. We don't know whether it will be extended again on the 15th of September. Be that as it may, even if it was to be extended or to be cancelled on the 15th of September, when we count 3 months, it takes us to the 15th of December. So in relation to the date of 30th of November or 15th of December, it means the 30th of November will come first. Now, this determination, we were mindful of the fact that we intended to license spectrum through an auction in December. Now, let's for a moment step back and say we did not have COVID pandemic. It means industry would not be sitting with temporary allocated spectrum. Now, I'm just highlighting this. This is a matter that, of course, the authority will apply itself on. This is a matter where the authority has already requested in the past week or two, requested licensees to make written submissions and representations on how they have utilized the spectrum, what are the challenges going forward, and so forth. Because we can only regulate from an informed position. So once we have collated those submissions, some of which may relate to this last window that we have opened until the 16th of September, the authority will sit, will have a proper consideration of the reality, balancing all facts. Indeed, Honorable Chair, as you've rightly said, there's a lot of balancing that needs to happen. Spectrum is a very valuable asset and resource that belongs to the people of South Africa. And in the way that we license or issue, whether temporarily or permanent, we need to be very, very, very measured in our approach. So in a nutshell, as to what will happen with this spectrum post 30th of November, it is a decision and a consideration that, of course, will have to happen at the level of the authority, informed by the written representations of all interested stakeholders and members of the public. The last question was the possibility for junior players by WIP Kubeka, junior players. Indeed, the one, the way it to achieve exactly that, you know, to take a form of what might be called a new entrant in the space. You know, of course, details will be in the ITAs, but indeed, this is a possibility, it's a pro-transformation tool that, will be injected into the sector and indeed focusing largely on emerging, junior players, to be precise. Honorable Chairman, I hope we have answered all questions. Thank you. If there are any follow-ups, of course, we are willing and ready to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Kasa. May I check, honorable members, if there are follow-up questions? Honorable Fandam, Honorable Kubeka. Yes.
I am
giving anyone.
Mackenzie, my hands up.
Honorable Mackenzie, I'm trying to check if I see correctly from this side. Is that Honorable Mlala?
It's fine. I'm the last to speak. Thank you.
In that order, Honorable Fonda, Honorable McKinney, Honorable Lala Blas.
Thanks, Chair. This African's Office Minister is breathtaking. And I mention it every single meeting. And we are very polite in the way we ask the questions. But the way she responds speaks to deep-seated arrogance and untouchability that is a huge, huge problem. This is a person who refers to herself in the third person, which if you analyze that, it goes to the psyche of a person who regards themselves far better and higher and smarter and all of that. I need to say that. I asked a very specific question. So did Honorable Mackenzie. And if we ask questions here in Parliament as MPs elected to represent the people, we expect answers. What we don't expect is for a minister to say, well, you know, if you have a problem, just refer to investigation. No, we're asking you. This is part of our job. You must tell us the answers. The whole preamble she went into before finally saying, no, my husband does not do business with any of the entities. Why could you not just say that instead of basically telling Honorable Mackenzie, well, if you read it in the paper and you think you have evidence, go have it investigated. He asked the question as a member of parliament and you give that answer. You do not tell people, yeah, just go have it investigated. No, it's unacceptable. As it stands, she says here her job is to write policy and do all sorts of things, a job she is not doing. Instead of what she's doing, she is picking silly fights with the post office. She made a mess of the ICASA process. She disrespected parliament. Many of her entities are on her knees. And if we do not take a very, very serious stance against this minister, she will continue to be a wrecking ball in the sector that she is in charge of. I, for one, have had quite enough of her. I asked you a very simple question, Minister. I said, will you apologize to this committee? You messed the process up and you went and then fixed it, which is an admission that you were wrong. And you went back and you fixed your problems. That is why now we can no longer take the matter for disciplinary action because you have now come back and you have fixed what you did wrong. What I am asking of you Will you apologize? Open quote. Will you apologize? Close quote. That's my question. If you will not answer that question, I will take it as you saying you do not think you need to apologize because you are untouchable, because you are that arrogant that you think you can mess up a process. It was an embarrassment. No, please don't interrupt me. On two occasions, the National Assembly... No, please don't interrupt me.
It's point of order, Chair. Chair?
Anyway, I'm almost finished. My question is this. Will you apologize?
Please
let me finish. I'm almost done. You can raise a point of order when I'm done. My point is this. Will you apologize to this committee? That's my question.
Honorable,
and I'd like to have it answered. Thank you, Chair. I'm done now.
Thank you, Chair. Actually, it was a point of order. So I just wonder, as Honorable Van Dam, I want to say to Honorable Van Dam, you ask a question to the minister, and the minister have tried to respond. Maybe can you just say maybe the manner or the tone that he's answering to you, you find it as a problem. Can we just maybe note where it is a problem in order that maybe minister can try to sort it? But the fact remains, she responded to your question while you asked those questions to her. Not to say the minister didn't want to respond. And maybe the minister, she's
with,
writing.
With,
she responded.
With all due respect
and,
I have not given you an opportunity to speak, Honorable Kubega.
Okay,
is on the platform.
Sorry, can I speak,
you
please?
You continue in that way, I take you to be finally of the chair that yes, Honorable Kubega to speak.
She
on my point of order, Chair. Can I speak?
Honorable Kubega is still on the platform, Honorable Van
Dam. Thank you, no problem. I'm saying the minister, she's responded. And can we just have this thing in our mind to say the minister also, she's having a play to role in these entities as she is supposed to play the role. So can we just take even that one into consideration to say minister have a role to play in all these entities. And we are allowed also us, maybe if there is a challenge, to engage the minister. So I'm saying, can Honorable Van Dam, if there is somewhere where you feel that minister doesn't respond the way you want, can you just explain further in order that minister must come in and respond to your question? Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson?
Honorable Van Dam, I have not recognized you as because you said at the time that Honorable Kubega was raising the point of order, you are stuck. And I want us to come back to this point.
No, because
we
are
agreeing.
Can I rise on a point of order then?
Point of order on Honorable Van Dam.
On Honorable Kubega, Chairperson. She's finished speaking now. I'd like to raise my point of order. I wanted to allow her
and don't use it to give more information.
No
point of order.
With all due respect, I did not ask Honorable Kubega anything. I didn't ask her to answer the question that I asked the minister. The question was very simple. Will she apologize? I don't know how much simpler I can make it than that. Will she apologize to the committee? That's the question. Maybe Honorable Kubega feels she needs to protect the minister. That's not my issue, and I can get there. Question yam, as a member of this committee, which I do not need to go through Honorable Kubega for approval, is to the minister. Will she apologize? Kakwa.
Honourable Members, I know the Minister may decide whether she would respond later when all questions have been asked. But the point raised by Honourable Kubega, Honourable, if you've asked a question to the Minister like it would happen when you ask even in the plenary, the Minister would respond to your question.
Mm.
The issue is not whether the question would have been answered satisfactorily or not, because it would be on the basis of how you look at it. And if you are not satisfied with that answer, you have an opportunity to still ask the question when you are given the chance to ask a question, whether that will be done in or if you are given another moment in the meeting. We have given opportunities to members to make follow-up questions. And when I recognized you, it was about making a follow-up question. And I thought that's what you were trying to do. And Honorable Kubeka is just indicating to you that maybe you may be dissatisfied with the tone or anything else, or not satisfied in that the answer is not in the way you would have wanted it to be. But the fact of the matter is the Minister would have responded to the that you asked. And in your follow-up question, you are clarifying that the matter that she raised about disciplinary and all, you are no longer pursuing that matter. And I'm sure, to be fair with the Minister, that has not been the issue they've raised earlier on. And she gave you the response in as far as the facts that are before and what goes around in terms of what is being said to be actions that people intend taking. Would it suffice, as I said, the Minister, I don't answer for the Minister, but it's just to help the meeting to move forward. Will it suffice for that? If the Minister would want to come specifically to this question, she would, but we must respect that in the first round of questions, there have been responses given. It may just be an issue of whether you are satisfied with the response or not. I do not want us to have a meeting that degenerates to a point where we will be dealing with a point of order to another point of order and get to be sidetracked from the real issues that are before us of playing our oversight and help the department and its entities to deliver on the mandate that they've been given by the country. So I do not want us, Honourable Van Damme, to pursue the matter further, because you would have asked the question and you would have said, anyway, you completed that point, would wait for the Minister if she has got any further clarity that she wants to give from the answer that she would have given in case you didn't hear the point that she was making. So I would want us to move from that point. That's a ruling I want to make in order to allow the other members to also still ask the follow-up questions. That's really the oversight we need to do, is to allow all members to be able to engage. Please accept that ruling, Honourable
Fatima. I don't want to misunderstand you. Can I just clarify what you're saying? I don't want to misunderstand you. Are you saying that the rules that apply in the National Assembly, for example, during an oral question session, that you can rule in committee that a minister does not have to answer a question again because she answered it before? Are you saying that because she answered it before, I do not have a right to come back in my follow-up and say, no, your answer was not satisfactory, this is what I'd like you to answer? Are you saying that is what you're saying? I just want to be sure. Chairperson? You're breaking up. I just don't want to misunderstand you.
The connection is that I want to hear this, you to hear this. Can you hear me? Honorable Kubeka, please mute now. Honorable Van Damme, can you hear me now?
I can, yes, thank you.
Okay. What I'm saying, Honorable Van Damme, is that your first question that you asked, the minister would have responded to it. It may be that you may not be satisfied with the answer, but it does not mean that there would have not been an answer to that question. I have since given an opportunity to members to make follow-up questions given the answers that they've received from the minister and the entity. And I want to place it on record that I had given you that opportunity to make the follow-up questions like I would do with the other members that are followed after you. But the point really is that it will not be that the minister did not respond or the chair is asking the minister not to respond. But we need to clarify that there's been a response. You may have not been satisfied. You would have made a follow-up that probably your question was not understood, and this is why you are making it simple what you thought would be answered by the minister. And I said that the minister would come at some point to respond to questions that she need to respond to or clarify the response that she would have given to the meeting. I do not want you to create an impression, if that's the impression you have, that the chair is not allowing members to engage the minister or ask questions to the minister. In fact, we have been quite democratic as the committee to still give an opportunity for members to come back on the issues if they are not clarified. We do so not because we have to just do it, but it's to make sure that by the end of the meeting, the members understand the discussion, but also what we recommend to do what because they participate. So please, Honorable Van Damme, understand it in that context. There's no such a thing like blocking members from asking the questions from the minister and blocking the minister from responding to the questions that have been asked. And I'm sure the minister would clarify the response that she gave in that regard. I hope you understand that. In that way, I would want to move and give Honorable Kubeka to ask a follow-up question. Honorable Kubeka. Kubeka, unmute your mic and speak.
Can you hear me? Chair?
Honorable Kubeka, we hear you.
Okay. No, thanks very much. My input was this one, Chair, to say, as the chairperson of ICASA is trying to respond to our answers, he must just understand and know to say it's a passion to us on the issue of the spectrum, on the side of rolling out the spectrum, but he must take note to say, I'm not saying he must be biased, but on the side of these junior players, can he take note that it's also a concern in order that they must grow, and also on the side of the women empowering side also it's a concern to us to say they need to take that side seriously also. So there is no more a turning point to say now we will have this concern and that concern. Us, we want just to see a work being done and being pushed in order that at least our economy can see the light actually at the end of the tunnel. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mukenza.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a couple of follow-ups, please. Firstly, I wrote this at the top of my page. I just wanted to congratulate Dr. Modimeng on the movement forward in the licensing of TV white spaces. I think that's a very positive development. Dr. Modimeng, you didn't answer my question on rapid deployment. The minister issued a policy directive, long overdue and very welcome, and congratulated for that. But the language she used was very alarming, as I'm sure you know. And this is why I wanted to ask you, in terms of ICASA the regulations around rapid deployment, how far are you down the road with that? When do you expect to issue those guidelines? And how many, or what was the volume of response you received from the public? And have you had an opportunity to go into that and to carefully consider the matter of private property, which seems to be the overwhelming concern for most people around the rapid deployment policy, private property and the ability of telecommunications or mobile network operators coming in and simply occupying a piece of land to put up a mast or lay down fiber with no say from the private property owner involved. So I think your comments around, especially around reassuring members of the public, I think can be very, very useful. So if you could answer that for me. Then also in terms of the 700 bands of spectrum occupied by broadcasters and the digital broadcast migration project, how is that impacting on your work? This was a question I asked you, in terms of your spectrum auction and making those spectrum bands available. And when do you see that finally happening? When do you see yourself being able to auction off those bands that you actually have in your possession to assign to those operators that need it? Then just lastly, just to follow on from your discussion on the WOAN, have you had any discussions with any specific stakeholders or interested players? Can you give me an idea, in fact, more than an idea, can you tell me who are the main people who have expressed interest or who are interested in participating in the WOAN that you're in the process of establishing? Thank you very much, Chairperson. I appreciate that.
Chairperson, your network is very good. Thank you, Chair. I hope I'm audible.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you properly. It's okay. Let me proceed. I hope everybody is hearing what I'm saying. Thanks, Honorable Minister. Thanks, ICASA, for the presentation. I think maybe I should start by saying that this committee has been doing quite well in terms of working together, various political parties. I sometimes get embarrassed when we spent about 15 to 20 minutes arguing about one simple thing that we could resolve. Just as an introductory note. But colleagues, I think my question is on national sports. There's an issue that we are overlooking, the issue of the process. Can ICASA outline the process from now until the matter is final? Because I don't see where Parliament is getting in terms of the consultation process. The last time, if I recall well, when we met with ICASA, there were certain specific issues that we raised on the national sports broadcasting rights. And I don't get a sense that whether they have been dismissed or they've been incorporated into the future. I can just give an example on how a dispute were resolved. I think we had a long discussion on the disputes, how disputes are resolved around the issues of national sporting rights. So I don't get a sense that our input. Now, what I want to know is whether from here, we still have another engagement at the level of Parliament before it's finalized. Because I'm concerned about the number of things that I think should be addressed. The second issue is, I just want to make a different follow-up on the one issue from what Honorable McKenzie raised. How will this committee, ICASA, how will this committee satisfy itself that players, in new and incoming players, will be in when won during the beauty contest, the story that you have presented? Because I don't see how after this process we still... the reason I'm raising that is that can we perhaps have some form of... what do they call it? Some idea on the terms of reference of that beauty contest. Not necessarily get into details. I'm not infringing on your mandate, I hope so. But just an idea of what, because here we're having two small companies competing with quite big, very big companies. Small players with big players. Obviously, in most instances, competition is never fair in that regard. So I don't know what guarantees will you provide to us in relation to the new and in upcoming players in relation to one. And maybe my last question will be on the issue of the temporary spectrum. Because I think it's the chair who asked that question. I did not get a clear answer on what about this issue that other players who got the temporary spectrum have actually developed to a level of acquiring 5G services and towers and so on. What will be the impact of that when you take away the spectrum and the advantages that they got through that process? Because in a way, it raises unfair competition to the newcomers. So Chairperson Rose raised that quite sharply, but I did not get a clear answer. Maybe if ICASA can still come back to that so that I can be clear. I think those are my questions, Chair. I'm just worried that the issue of the Minister and Honorable Bafandam, we need to attend to that maybe sometimes, because I don't want us to be bogged down in semantics. But I think the reality is we need an engagement with possibly with the Minister and Honorable Fandam outside this formal process so that we sort this thing out, because I can see that for me, both of them, the way they are responding to each other, it's not very good for this committee. Thanks, Chair.
Chairperson, are you still there?
I would like to propose that maybe Ms. Kubega should take over. I see the chairperson is not appearing on the list of participants. Maybe he's been cut off due to connection, but I think Ms. Kubega can take over in the meantime.
Ms. Kubega?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
All right. Let's apologize. All of us, we are having now this challenge of load shedding, actually. Can I give over to the minister to respond if there is a question which is she's supposed to respond? If it's not, I'll give over to the chairperson of ICASA. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Kubega. I would like, with your permission, before I get into the responses, just to seek clarity so that when I respond, I know I'm speaking on a fact. Honorable Fandam raises that most of the entities under the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies are on their knees.
Sorry for coming in, Minister. Maybe even yourself, can you please switch off the camera, because I can see now the network.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a challenge, I can see. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you, Honorable Kubega. I was saying, with your permission, before I get into the answers on the question, I would like to seek clarity. Honorable Van Damme raises in her statement earlier that entities, most of the entities that are under the Department of Communications and Digital Technologies are on their knees. If I were to get clarity, which ones are those, so that as I provide responses, I'm talking to specifics. I would like to get that clarity first, Honorable Kubega.
Okay. Can I... maybe give to Honorable Van Damme before you can respond to other questions. Honorable Van Damme?
Honorable Mulala raised a very clear and I think very politically mature point to say that the way the minister responds is problematic. I will make very sure in my initial questioning that I was very polite and my reaction was to her. And now here she comes again. If you, Minister, do not know, if you think all of your entities are going, functioning well, then respond that. I ask my question, answer now.
Honorable Van Damme.
She doesn't know the state of her entities, then she must say
no,
so.
No.
She's busy picking fights all over town. Busy
Honorable Van Damme.
She must answer the questions.
Honorable Van Damme. With due respect, it's just a question to say, in those entities, if you can identify those, please, Honorable Mulala, as you have said, Honorable Van Damme, let us not try to, it seems as if we are fighting here. We want just to correct and also to work, because we are here for the delivery for the whole public. Can you just please be, and I'm repeating it again, if there is a serious challenge, let us sort out immediately after this meeting, Honorable Van Damme. But can you just respond to this question with due respect, Honorable Van Damme?
Yes, Chairperson, my problem is that the minister is arrogant and incompetent. So that's my problem. Can she, if she thinks all her entities are going well and everything is hunky-dory, then she must say so. If she doesn't know the state of her entities, then she must say. My problem with her? Incompetent, arrogant.
Honorable Mulala, I was saying there is no need now the minister to respond. It seems as if now it will be a war at the moment in the manner in which Honorable Van Damme is trying to present. Can we just leave
as
that?
No, Chairperson,
now
I want my answer. You guys decide that for me. No, Acting Chair, I would like my answers. You do not get to say minister must not respond. I would like my answers, please.
But we answer because it. I was saying, can
I
you
to
identify?
Let
us not make a dialogue, Honorable Van Damme.
No,
let us not make a dialogue.
You are making a dialogue by blocking my questions. If she thinks the entity is going under her assignment, then she must say so. My second question, is she going to apologize? You cannot decide for me whether or not the minister must respond. I'm a member of this committee. I would like my response. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Van Damme. Can I give to the chairperson of ICASA maybe to respond to the questions that are relevant on his side?
My apologies, Honorable Kubeka. There was one on rapid deployment again by Honorable Mackenzie. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Honorable Mackenzie asked the same question that he asked earlier, in terms of how many submissions, and as I did say earlier, the closing date was only yesterday, and the teams are still looking at that. Once the process is finalized, we will therefore be able to provide information to Parliament. The second question was on the issue of assuring property owners and all that. I did say in the last presentation that where we were presenting on rapid deployment, actually we're not presenting on rapid deployment, but this question arose from Honorable Mackenzie. I did say this is a draft policy direction, which is why we extended for consultations, and therefore members must read it and with the public. And I did indicate that there is nowhere in the policy direction or in the policy where it says property owners will be undermined. If the member, as I said earlier, if the member, there's a particular clause, as he did indicate last time, that maybe it's the language that is written there, and I explained it, there is no intent at all from the ANC government to say property owners should not be consulted. It's not in the policy direction. So I reiterate that I said last time when we were responding to this question, and to say we can't unfortunately provide figures now because the process closed only yesterday. The teams are processing that. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister.
Before you move on, Honorable Mulala, sorry about that.
Yeah, Chair, I wondered before that, before ICASA could respond. Chair, am I allowed?
Yes, you are allowed, Honorable Mulala.
Yeah, I don't want to take law into my hands. I'm a very disciplined. I'm saying, maybe I'm misquoted. What I was saying is that this committee has been doing well in terms of working together as a collective, both ministry, the opposition, and all of us. And I'm seeing that we are getting gradually degenerating into the battles that could easily be resolved. So I'm worried about that. That was my concern. So maybe it must not be construed that I said something else. All I'm saying is that we must work all together to ensure that at least both from our side as committee members, the ministry and entities, to ensure that we speak with politeness so that we help each other resolve the challenges that South Africans are facing, rather than get into battles that are wasting a lot of time. We spend a lot of time arguing rather than resolving issues. That's the context, Chair. Thanks. I'm sorry for interfering.
Honorable Acting Chairperson, please, can I speak?
Before you can speak, can I just conclude on the side of the Honorable Mulala? Honorable Mulala, I was saying, no, we did hear you clearly. And we did understand what are you presenting on our side or on the side of the whole committee as it is and the department. And I fully agree to say we will never ever try to degenerate this meeting, because now all of us, we are important and we need to work together. As you said, we were working all these months hand in hand. So even if there is something which is not right, can we just try to correct rather than having this high tension and differences? But now I'll just try to give Honorable Van Damme, as I have given her that a chance by then to say, can she maybe identify those entities? But let me give her another chance in order that I must hear what is Honorable Van Dam saying? Honorable Van Dam.
My question wasn't answered, Chairperson. My question was, will the minister apologize? This meetings will not degenerate if members of this committee do not try and block and protect. We work together from across political parties. But when members start coming in and trying to protect people from their political parties, that is how meetings degenerate. I have a question I have asked the minister. I would request the acting chairperson not to block my question, because that is how meetings degenerate. I would like my questions answered. Here's a simple question. Will the minister apologize or not? I'd like that answer, Chair.
I thought that maybe the minister have responded.
No,
Honorable
she
Minister.
No, she
thank
hasn't.
Thank you, Honorable Fanda. Honorable Minister, before the chairperson can respond to those questions that Honorable Mlala have asked, can you just try to respond to this question? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also request your protection. That honestly, as I'm expected to come and account in the spirit of a committee that works together, but also as individuals, I am a member of parliament myself. The reference to me as if I'm not a member of parliament, which therefore assumes that other members have a right to speak the way they want to me, is very wrong. I just want to plead for that. This is not the first time. All the recordings of this committee, I have to go through the same thing. And as Honorable Mulala said, I don't know how it can be resolved outside, but this is something that is happening in the committee, not outside. I do not have friends outside, and I really always emphasize that when I'm at work, I am at work. When I'm at my social space, I am my social space. On work-related matters, I don't like bringing my social life. As I proceed, Honorable Kubega, to reiterate what I said earlier when the question was asked, I did say, if the honorable member, because when you say somebody must apologize, you're insinuating that a wrong is done, and the honorable member seemed to be convinced. I then quoted from what the honorable member said, that of taking this arrogant, ill-disciplined minister to the disciplinary committee of parliament. And therefore, I said, I'm welcoming that. If the member, I reiterate this, feels that there's any wrong that the minister has done, she must follow the steps that she has to take when we have to correct a minister or a member of parliament that has done wrong. That is my answer, Honorable Kopega. And it is not going to change whether the question is asked 25 times or 50 times. That's the response I'm providing. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you very much, Minister. Can I give to the chairperson of ICASA to respond to those questions that Honorable Mlala have asked? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair Whip. Okay, we'll start with Honorable McKenzie on TV White Spaces. It was a compliment on the good work he said we are doing. Thank you for that, Honorable McKenzie. I will answer the 700 band issue in relation, specifically in relation to the digital migration issue, and then I will give the CEO to respond on the ICASA side or our involvement in the rapid deployment space. So with regard to the 700 band, indeed, this band is currently, you know, occupied by broadcasters, and it's one of the bands that have been earmarked for auction. So the auction will go ahead because the digital migration process is happening parallel. So the auction will go ahead, the band will be included, and on our side, of course, there will be assurances and surety that is given to prospective bidders and licensees that indeed whatever they acquire at an auction on this band will be given to them. If there are any implications in terms of the license span, the span of the duration of that particular license, These are things that the authority can be very considerate. I mean, if they bought an asset, but it was not immediately available, we need to then be mindful when we consider the duration of that particular spectrum license. So indeed, it will be auctioned. I hope I have answered. People, do we have an idea? We don't have an idea of the specific groupings or individuals and whatever. The clarity in this regard will emanate from the publication of the ITAs and the responses thereof. So at this juncture, the authority has not engaged with any grouping or anyone on the basis that they are either promised a loan or given a loan or something to that effect. I also hope this one takes care. And then there was a comment by Honorable the Chair Whip Kubeka, which links to the loan question of Honorable Molale. So I will deal with those, and then I will give colleagues to answer on the spot process as well as on the repeat deployment. Now, this issue of small players, you know, Honorable Molale asked the question, how will the committee ensure new players are in and so forth? At this juncture, it's the authority that can ensure that it happens. And that is why in my earlier responses, I said the spirit with which we view the whole issue of the WON is to effect transformation. Participation of women, you know, previously disadvantaged the individuals and so forth, guided by applicable laws in the Republic. So in this regard, it's the authority that will ensure that from a policy perspective, government has expressed its interest on how the WON should really be this, you know, agent of transformation. And I think that's what we will include in our ITAs. And of course, the demarcation of the two processes also helps exactly that, where we know that we have the spectrum for industry, which will go out through an auction, and we have this separate approach, because if they are all clumped together into one bowl, that's where issues of, you know, added advantage. There was a question asked by Honorable Molale on spectrum, on the temporary spectrum rather, and how it may be benefiting, you know, other players, giving them an added advantage. He made mention to 5G services and the procurement of towers, if I heard him well. The purpose of this temporary spectrum was to ease network congestion. That was the purpose. That's how even the policy, which was issued urgently on the side of government, was. And that is how the authority interpreted the constraints at the time, in consultation with industry players. Now, most of them applied and received spectrum. There is in a case of one or two who did not. Of course, it was a voluntary exercise. Now, spectrum is technology neutral, and that's the point we always make. So if by us issuing a spectrum for network, the easing of network congestion, 5G services and other things were launched, it is well known that spectrum was issued on a temporary basis. It might very well be, I mean, I can't speak on behalf of industry, but it might very well be that they were being a little bit, you know, investing ahead of the curve, knowing that an auction is coming, and they might as well, on the back of this temporary spectrum, you know, launch certain services. That was not the intent on our part. We had wanted them to ease network congestion, and we are of a view that they continue to do so. So when the time comes, as I have said, you asked what will happen, Honorable Molale. When the time comes when this spectrum is to be returned, if things are to remain the way they are today, it means there have not been any amendments to regulations or anything. Then it means they will have to return that spectrum. But if it so happens that the authority would have considered other representations made and other engagements, then and arrive at a different conclusion. That, of course, is something that will be considered and communicated properly. But as matters stand, there has not been any amendment that is aimed at extending the validity period of the regulations on our part. So I would like to give the CEO to just respond to Honorable McKenzie on the rapid deployment part, at least from an ICASA perspective. I think that part he's been asking repeatedly. And then once the CEO is done, I would ask Councillor Kadi to just clarify what next in terms of the sports broadcasting process. Thank you very much. CEO.
Thank you, Chair. I think Honorable McKenzie, just to supplement the response that the Minister has provided by outlining the process and where ICASA fits in. So the rapid deployment consultation process at the moment, I would say it's still at the first stage. And the first stage entails the Minister publishing the draft policy for consultation in terms of Section 3, Subsection 5B of the ECA. So that would be the first leg. The second leg would then be, following that consultation, the Minister will then publish the final policy direction directed at ICASA, and that would be done in terms of Section 35C. ICASA will then consider the policy, again in terms of Section 34 of the ECA, and upon consideration of the policy, we will then have to embark on a regulation-making process in terms of Section 4, right, with Section 21. So at this stage, Honorable McKenzie, as the Minister outlined, the comments and the representations on the draft policy are sent to the department and not to ICASA. I think we will then only get the ICASA leg of the engagement in terms of how ICASA will then apply itself to the final policy once issued and give effect to that policy once issued in terms of the fourth stage in my outline of the iteration. I hope that clarifies the process, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you to Mekadi.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I think it's two issues alluded to. The one of dispute resolution mechanism, and also the one of what then in terms of the next steps. Let me first begin with the dispute resolution mechanism that is in place, and how the committee alluded to the fact that the fine was too hefty, and how other comments were also dealt with in context of the presentation. Chair, I wish to confirm that we are going to have a second bout, a second round of discussions through submissions, so that the authority is in a position to consider many other issues that we are determining factor in the sporting sector as we speak. These also come from comments that were made previously. The initial comments currently, which is that of not having the PSL in the second draft, which in its form is informed of inputs that were made. The Premier Soccer League is not part of the list. I think Mr. Tim said to me on the side that I know that Orlando Pirates is a national team. It's not a national sporting event. But then how we proceed is that we are going to be informed of public input, meaning that we are not going to come back to Parliament to confirm the position and take further inputs, but we are going to open up for the public to make inputs. That is the legal requirement of the ICASA Act, Section 45, which only refers that when we are done, we may, in consultation with the Minister, engage on the final list. Remember, this is about the list that broadcasters and all the required parties need to be informed of
insofar as broadcasting of sporting events. So what this then says that at a particular point when ICASA issues a second call, that is when further considerations will be taken. We've looked through many of them, and that is the case we are in. I wish not to preempt our position at this point, because then by the time we engage with the public, they would know or think in whatever manner we field our questions, they will think that it's informed of particular positions. And the manner in which we want is to open it up once more and include some of the considerations and concerns which are valid. Thank you, Chair. I think I've answered the dispute mechanism component and where and how it's going to be resolved or looked into as Parliament, the Portfolio Committee, made the input. And also then, where to the second draft towards finalization. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think that takes care of our responses on the follow-up questions presented. Thank you.
Tembinko, si another chair missing. I'm just quickly trying to look into it, Mr. Mulala, before I can request the services of an acting chairperson.
Another acting.
Time for the DA to step in. We'll stay forever.
I'm ready to lead. we'll do a few. A coup. Honorable Lesiba, do you have a question?
Hello.
Sorry.
Hello?
Should I interrupt them, Jay?
You can speak, Harira. I'm sure you can speak because you are on the line.
Ms. Kubeka, I've got the chair on the line. We just want to test if the chair can say something via my phone, if that's possible. I've unmuted my mic. Chair, you can go ahead.
Honorable Kubeka, can you hear me?
Honorable Kubeka, Chair, has also been, she's also left the meeting. I'm sure she's also experiencing the same challenges as you. So she's also not here.
Can you hear Tembi Kosi? Can you hear, Chair?
Yes, from my side, I can hear. I just hope other members and participants can hear as well.
Yes, I can hear the Chair.
No, we can hear.
All right, no, thank you. Honorable members, this is a struggle we have of energy and connectivity. But I've tried to follow up to a phone call to follow the discussions later, which I then thought that Honorable Kubeka would have handled the matters we had and that came best to a point of summarizing the discussions, as we still have the other items to deal with. I think, honorable members, what is important for us to note is that there is progress made in a number of areas that the regulator has reported on. And those other matters that need engagement, we'll still have to engage on them. The sporting rights, the Honorable Lala would have asked about whether there's still an opportunity for us to make inputs. I think the understanding is that there's still engagement in those. And honorable members would remember that we have also had a joint committee meeting sport and culture. That at the time of getting such feedback, it is worth considering that for consistency and understanding of information, for us that we consider such a feedback in the
future. Sorry, just order, please. Whoever's typing, can you mute your mic? I'm finding it difficult to hear. Thank you.
Can we hear now, Honourable Members?
Yes, thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. And as I said, I think with regard to the spectrum rollout, I think we should be, as the committee, having received the explanation that the delay, firstly, is to ensure that the legal compliance, understanding the space, but secondly, that the delay that we would have had would require CASA to have some space to recover the time. I think it's important that as committee members we understand that. And that understanding would also mean the respect for the independence of the authority. That if they are experiencing problems and the best way to deliver within the parameters of the law would mean that extension, given the delays that have been experienced there. I think the chair of ICASA explained this, I think, quite properly. That white work was happening in ICASA with the number of councillors that they've had, it would have not been possible to cover almost every aspect, and this would not cast doubt on those that were there that they did not do anything in that regard. Surely we would learn lessons from this experience and be able in future to look at things differently. So I have thought that's a very important issue. We have clarity also in relation to the creation of balance between expectations created, of course, unintended, to industry, that they have also deployed infrastructure, but you also want to create a fair auctioning process that doesn't seem to be advantaging those that would have taken the opportunity when it was given to apply for temporary. That in the period which would close on the 16th of September, Chair, if I hear you well, that you are creating an opportunity for submissions on the ITA in a way that will also help the regulator to be able to come to a determination as it also considers the matter of the temporary spectrum that's already allocated versus the changes in the dates that were earmarked, which in this case was December, for the auctioning. I think there's an understanding in that regard. And I would therefore want us to encourage those that have got interest on this matter to really use the channels that are open to engage the process. And I'm sure we will be briefed or updated as the committee so that as we do oversight, we remain relevant as a committee in that we have up-to-date information on what is happening. This is so because we take keen interest on this matter because the president announced that there would be this auctioning of spectrum. Of course, working on the date that we're given. So we have to make it happen irrespective. And I think that's what this committee's oversight role should help to do. I think on other matters that would have been raised in the overview, there's still a commitment that on those matters that have nothing to do with the CASA that may have been raised, the minister, after resolving those matters indicated in the previous portfolio committee, will have an opportunity to have a discussion with the minister on those matters, having a report that would be before us presented by the minister after all the consultations, which included consultations as it relates to the post office with the social development and SASA. So with that, honorable members, I would want us to really wrap up on this item as we continue to the next item on the agenda. And as I said earlier, Minister and we would not really hold you hostage because MVPA political leadership is not around. You can be in the platform really on your own voluntary basis that you would want to still engage or listen to the discussion. But if there are pressing matters on what that needs to be done, we'll also release you with an appreciation that that work will also still help this committee to do its oversight work on what you are delivering on the other side. As I said, we can't keep you in the meeting if there are pressing matters that you need to deal with. With that, I will be asking the MDTA, and I want to just clarify how we are going to approach the MDTA presentation, given that I can't see the members, and I do not want the meeting to collapse from a sharing point of view where I cannot identify speakers who want to speak, that I'll be assisted on the other side where you are able to see the members who would want to speak in that regard. So with regard to the MDTA, I'm sure that the CEO still present. I'm not sure if we have been joined by the minister or deputy minister at this time from the presidency. An indication?
I have not seen them on the list, apart from that we had received those apologies, but I think the person that is currently leading is Ms. Martina Della Togna, because I saw her in any way just setting up everything. So the deputy minister and the minister are still not here. Thanks.
Okay, so the board members are here. Now, I think what we'll then try and do is to allow board members if they are on the platform to just do, of course, the overview and how they are going to be approaching the presentation. May I request, honorable members, that with regard to the MDTA presentation, we have received the presentation well on time, but we've also had a bite in the round table discussion with broadcasters just a day or two ago. And the MDTA also spoke to the interventions that they've done on COVID-19, which is the essence of the presentation today. And that honorable members participated in the round table discussion have also had an opportunity to ask questions or two, but probably given the time, they may still have follow-up questions that they could have asked and they would now ask. For that reason, I would really want to reduce the time for the MDDA presentation, given all this explanation, that between the board and the actual presentation will give 15 minutes maximum, so that by 11:30, the latest, we are done with the actual presentation, and that we can take questions that members may still have. As I said, we would be like having a second bite on the presentation, and therefore the presenters will probably focus on more of updated information that they are bringing to clarify the presentation further, rather than getting on a line-by-line presentation, which members have seen and have also had an opportunity of engaging in the last previous discussion. I hope I'm clear, Honourable Members, and that you agree that we are approached in that way. Am I still audible?
Yes, yes, you are, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Oh. They can hear you, Chair.
All right. May I then just check if there are board members then that we allow the board members. I'm not sure if Honorable Kubeka is back to assist me also the culture, given the technological challenges we have at this time, resulting from our
teachers. Ms. Kubeka is not back as yet, Chairperson.
Okay. But then, if, as I said, if the board members please take the in 15 minutes, we share it between the board and those that will be presenting from the executive management of the agency.
We can't hear who's speaking.
I'm struggling to hear. Not sure if other members are able to hear.
Chairperson, yes. I think Ms. Della Togna has indicated on the chat that she also has network problems. However, we do also have Ms. Poche that is currently in front of the committee. So I see there are challenges with Ms. Della Togna, so I hope that Ms. Poche will then maybe take over. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, can we do that, and maybe you just be cautious, Ms. Poche, on your presentation, that probably if the board member is able to come at a later stage, we'll still be within the 15 minutes that give order to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Peterson, Honorable Minister of the CDT, if she's still here. And colleagues and honourable members, it's going to be quick as the chairperson has requested. I'm trying to move. Can everyone see my presentation?
Yes, we can see the presentation.
All right. So I'm just going to fly through the visions and the missions, because those things are known. Also that we had a meeting, I think a joint, we attended the joint committee 2 days ago, and so I dealt with those issues. I think just to pause on the funding, on the funding model slide, to say that in terms of this communication we've now received from the National Treasury on compulsory budgetary cuts over the next MTSF, and that is going to put a strain on the print sector. in terms of the funding for the MPDA. We're going to see what we can do, but that the print sector was getting money from the fiscus, and I think that money with the budget cut is now being lost to it. List of our broadcast funders, obviously they give us the largest port in terms of the funding, and this is just how the budget is split. I'm now going to fly through the slide and deal exactly with the reason we are here today, which is the COVID-19. But just before I get to that, I think I would like to acknowledge the fact that the ICASA has spoken to and has also sent us the ITA for the possibility of licensing more televisions and more community televisions and even more community radio stations. Which I think the other ITA is closing in November sometime. So we'll see, because we are planning on expanding the footprint for the community television in particular. In as far as the community broadcasters are concerned or radio stations are concerned, we will be informed by the district model, which will focus our work in the future. So then in terms of the COVID-19, the MDDA then launched a 20 million emergency relief fund on the 30th of March, following the announcement by the president of the national pandemic and the national lockdown. So we then dispersed the first 10 million in April to 115 qualifying broadcasters and 116 qualifying print projects. There was a small criteria that they had to meet. You'll see on my slide there that they had to be valid certificates, they had to give us copies of publications, they had to be on air, bank statements and so forth, because we take pride in the fact that we must at all times ensure there's proper governance, there's compliance in terms of the use of funds that we disperse to the sector. And in terms of what was the total package given to each of the supported projects, it was a package of 45,000 rand, a print or broadcast project, and it was mainly for content generation, for telephones and data, for refueling, because the content generation had a car hire for the month. That was to allow the projects or the station people and the volunteers to be able to go to the communities and still gather news and still be able to disseminate. And for printing, we also had money for printing and distribution. What is important to note, members, is that this emergency relief is not limited to the number or to the beneficiaries of the current beneficiaries of the MDDA, but it is open to everyone in the sector for as long as you are community media sector or you are community print or community or small commercial print. We then are having dispersed the first tranche in April. On the 25th of May, we then launched the second phase. This slide just talks to the spread of the first phase. If I take the example of Limpopo, you see for broadcasters, we supported 16, and for print, which is this thing that looks like a book, it was 15 and so forth. So as I'm saying, on the 25th of May, we then launched through a very well-publicized marketing strategy. We launched the second phase, another 10 million, which was the second 10 million, which was approved by the board in end of March. And this time, there was a 50-20 split. 50,000 rands went to the community broadcasters, and 20,000 rands was set aside for the community print. And this is the reason I think earlier on I talked about the budgetary constraints in the print sector, that I think through the sustainability model that we are trying to come up with, we have to find other strategies to support particularly the small commercial media as opposed to them getting the same funding at the same grants as the community media, because that port has now shrunk, especially given that the major print houses are no longer supporting us since 2014-15. And the second phase, therefore, was responsive. We thought, because the economy was also on lockdown per se, that there would be a fallout in terms of rentals and salaries and stipends and so forth. And so we focused the second phase of the relief to those operational costs. And again, we had another qualifying criteria. And again, it was open to, it is currently under disbursement, this phase. It is taking a little bit more time, because if you applied and were granted the first tranche, you must then report in the second tranche There's also more stringent criteria in the second round in that people needed to demonstrate 3 months bank statement that they were impacted in terms of revenue generation by the pandemic. We have to date received about 115 applications from print and 192 from broadcast. And as I'm saying, some of them are in front of the board. We've paid about 5 million on that 10 million, 88 print and 84 broadcasters. In terms of what we did in terms of signal distribution, we also made a call in March and we dispersed already in April, May, we dispersed about 11.8 million to Centec on those qualifying projects again. And we also had about 2 million set aside for connect new connections. These are not new projects per se, but that we projects that we'd already invested in, but were still off air because Centec was unable to connect them without paying upfront due to the debt that they said they it actually had reached their risk tolerance threshold. So we then the board in March then approved 18 million, and 6.6 million is tied up the contracts of the projects that we also approved on normal grants on the 28th of March in this financial year. And how we're going to deal with the issue of signal distribution in the future, we are through this, the sustainability research. We're going to find other mechanisms, if there's any other possibility of making some of the projects to be self-providing, we're going to do that, but that the research must tell us what we must and where we must go and what else we can do in terms of cost-effective signal distribution. But when we advertise in this financial year again for projects to apply, we will also issue another application for those that need assistance with signal distribution. We've got about 7 million in this financial year that we've set aside for signal distribution. We will continue to do that so that we don't put a strain on Centec and that until we have come up with sustainable strategies and alternatives on signal distribution. This is just other work that we've done, cascading the work of government to the community broadcasters and community print, and that the minister could be seen and heard earlier on in the pandemic, engaging with about 5 to 8 community radio stations in a day, cascading the government messaging directly to the communities. We've also, in terms of trying to support the sector, have written to some organizations, Standard Bank, Google, Facebook, trying to really sort some source of funding or support from them in order for us to assist the sector further. We have not been very lucky, obviously, because everyone is constrained. This includes National Treasury, but we have now motivated to a multi-choice for more support. And this is as we think that the pandemic is going to be, the impact of the pandemic is going to last with us for a little bit longer. So not only are we waiting for, are we looking for money that we can disperse in this financial year, for instance, we are going back to the board to say, can we, from the current budget of the broadcasters, 40 million cream out about 10 million for the third round, which will see us dispersing as emergency relief by the end of the year. And I think that will be the last disbursement in emergency for this year. But then we are looking again at what can we do for the sector in the 2021 financial year because of the impact, lasting impact by the pandemic. Sector challenges, I'm not going to go through them, but safe to say that when we had a consultative conference mid-August, we actually turned this into research teams. They were actually converted into teams for commissions, and now we are going to have this research focusing on what came out of those commissions that focused on each of these sector challenges. And I think I've already dealt with the lobbying and partnership. We are meeting with so many other organizations. In fact, I'm encouraged and happy that the minister, when we met with him about days ago, and we're telling him that we went to Google, we went to SAP, AB InBev, we went to this one, and he said to me, "I think you're taking the longer route. I can assist, I'm willing to assist the MDDA and be part of its fundraising process." And the minister, the reason the minister is even willing to do that is because part of the mandate that is given to the MDDA is for us to expand the community television footprint. Currently, we've got about 5 televisions, the community televisions. I hope I'm correct, ICASA, and that we supported about four of them. And I noticed that in terms of the invitation to apply, that is ending, closing in November, the space is available and there's a possibility of licensing more community televisions across the country. So we will be doing that. If I can just close, this is the last slide. We are focusing on audience measurement. It is also going to be part of the research, but I'm encouraged to say that the Broadcast Research Council this week invited NCRF and the South African Community Radio Organization and the MDDA to sit on one of the committees that are improving the audience research in as far as BRC is concerned. But this is also another area of interest in terms of, because we know that with audience numbers, we breathe, then we get into investors that would be, it gives an appetite to investors for investing in the community radio station. So it's very key that we get that right. Expanding television footprint, I've already spoken to. The sustainability model, the terms of reference which emanate from the conference that we had in mid-August, a draft. They are going to the committee of the board mid-month, this month. But what we're hoping for is that by the time we review the MDDA as it turns 20 years in 2023 in January, that we shall have piloted some of the elements of the sustainability model. And also just talk about the Competition Commission Fund, that we are now on track. And I think Honorable Mackenzie asked questions around the digital presence by the community media sector. Honorable Mackenzie, it is some of the things that we're looking at. We have met with the mobile companies. It was a year ago already, asking them to zero-rate some of our websites, URLs. But we have just proposed to the board, I think a few weeks ago, that we would like to develop an app for all community broadcasters. Then we can move to the print, but we want to start with the broadcasting. We analyze a digital strategy in the next few months, and we are busy conducting digital literacy training. And in as far as who is online, who's not online, the unit called Project, which is Core Business, has also done an audit, and it has presented to a committee of the board on who is present in the digital space, in as far as the community broadcasters are concerned. So we do have that information. We are also consulting with Google and Facebook, and there is a division or department called Vault at Media 24 that is also willing to assist us with the digital presence by the community media. Thank you very much, Honorable Members and Honorable Chairperson. That's the end of my presentation.
Mic is on.
Thank you. Just check if there's any board member who would want to wrap the point up. I take it that we still have those connection problems. Honorable members, I hope I'm still audible.
Yes, Chair, you are audible, and Mr. Mackenzie's hand is up.
Ms. Van Damme as well, Chair, Mr. Mackenzie, and then Ms. Van Damme.
You said it's Honorable Van Damme?
Mackenzie first, and Ms. Van Damme afterwards.
It's Honorable Mackenzie and Honorable Van Damme.
That's correct, Chair.
Okay, any other hands?
Are there any other hands from members? Nothing, Chair.
Okay, we'll take those two at this point. Honorable Mackenzie?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and through you, thank you, Hajira. And thank you, ma'am, for the presentation on MDDA. I enjoy your work, and thank you for expanding on what we discussed during our working group. Ma'am, can you give me an indication of any interactions or engagements or programs that you have going with NMISA at the moment? And I know Namisa's in a state of flux. Also, again, more board shenanigans and this sort of thing. I'm not even sure who's heading that organization anymore. But what are the level of engagements you're having with Namisa, and how do they roll out training through their collabs, I presume, to community broadcasters? Then once again, you've referred quite positively to multi-choice. Can you just expand on that a little bit for me? I'm sorry if I've missed it earlier, and you might have to repeat yourself. Can you just tell me what multi-choice are bringing to the MDDA and the community broadcasting sector generally? Because we often see multi-choice and DSTV painted as the really bad boys of the industry. And then lastly, in terms of digitization of press content, I used to publish a magazine myself, and I found it really wasn't very difficult once you had the content digitized to upload it to a platform like PressReader, where, which, for example, is available to all parliamentarians, and your publication can be read, can in 158 countries across the world. So the platform exists. You just need to upload. They don't charge you for it either. You just need to upload your publications to that platform. So I just wondered if you were aware of that and whether you've had any work going in that regard. But thank you very much for your presentation. I much appreciate it. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mackenzie.
Thank you, Stula. I'd just like to say I am really encouraged by the work that MDDA is doing. I think at the beginning of lockdown, as a committee, we said that, you must make sure that efforts are put in place to help community media weather the COVID storm. So it's really great to see that you're going above and beyond going externally, engaging stakeholders to make sure that they can survive. So yeah, thank you for that. And then in terms of just managing the money that is given, so in the last parliament, we did an oversight visit over a couple of days to a number of community media, both in print and broadcasting. And what we found was that there is no paper trail in terms of the money that is given. Media are just given money and goodbye, and there's no kind of assessment of how is that money spent and all of that. And what we requested was that an audit be conducted of all the media that money has been given to, so that there's a paper trail, so you can come to Parliament and say, we gave X community media this amount of money, this is how the money was spent. Because what we found was that they'd be given money, then it's like, the money is finished, we need more money. So what we wanted to see was that also over and above giving them that money, that you put in place measures to make sure that they can self-sustain, because the money is not limited and you can't just keep dishing out money. So my question is, is there a measure that's been put in place for a paper trail so that money can be audited and you can be sure that, it's being spent for the purposes that is given? And then just in terms of making sure that the media can sustain themselves, what steps have you put in place so that, they don't keep coming back for money or that they can't sustain themselves beyond the money that you give them? But otherwise, it's really great to see you guys going above and beyond and approaching multi-choice and the banks. Great work in that regard. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Honourable Sandam. May I just check if there are other members who would want to speak before we give over to MDDA?
There's no indication on the system, Chairperson.
Yes, can I just check in case there are problems with the system? Because would want that after the NTTA response, we can also look towards the...
Let me check, Chairperson. Are there any other members who'd like to ask a question? We're not getting a response, Chair.
All right. I will give over to MTTA. I think there's a sense of appreciation. I join those who appreciate the presentation. But I do respond to the members. Just on the part around the finances. For the Parisula Community Radio stations. We have had a situation where they closed down some of them because of sustainability. Now that there is a new ITA to look at new applications that I invited. What is the plan in place and how is that communicated as part of this process of application so that people can know in advance that this is the new system we have put in and this is what we're looking at from a point of sustainability. Because they get to be many, and in the process they collapse. So I'm raising it because on one hand, we need to ensure that there are diverse voices on the ground looking at a number of aspects. But on the other hand, there is a sustainability question. But just because you are also working with the CIS, I'd say like your department where you you also report to the entity. In their report, they have also spoken to partnerships, for example, with the Facebook, and that getting a lot of space there as part of their contribution. Just to check on how the community media would have benefited from that COVID and whether there is a plan approaches for the future making from that. Maybe the last point is
Amen.
Bombo, can you just Bombo your mic, please? Sorry.
So I was just saying that on the third point, it's really the relations with the Centec. I think CCIA has presented to the committee an approach that they are trying to get rid of the other service providers, which have been costly in terms of content that they give to community radio stations and community TV. So then decided to go the center group, which would save them money as suppliers. But probably the question would be whether that also how it has benefited you or is it going to benefit you. So as you answer those questions, if you can just also answer those to clarify them. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members, for the questions. Honourable Members, as I'm saying, I'm not alone. I've got the whole executive with me, and I think I expected three board members to be with us, so we will share the questions. So if you allow me, I'll start with Honorable Maneli's questions and comments. So the issue of community radio stations closing down, sometimes not only because of finances, sometimes it's because, and mostly, if ICASA is still here, it's because of non-compliance with their broadcast licenses. and then sometimes we find them being switched, so then there would be sometimes over time they would lose the licenses because they've not complied. So it's either you have not reapplied for your license in the 6 months that you ought to apply, and so you lose the license for many reasons, but largely linked to corporate governance. The other issue we have, and that is why I've got this slide up, the other challenge we have, and that is the reason why we are happy that there's this district model, which will assist streamline our work as the MDDA. However, this, I'm not trying to say that we will then not support other projects, but that we're saying the DDM will be able at least to have some kind of a focus. If I make an example about Limpopo, Limpopo has got 33 community radio stations, if the statistics is still correct. We got this, I think, from ICASA 2 months ago. And we have funded 28 community radio stations in Limpopo. Look at Capricorn. Capricorn has got 13. And I'm not saying it's a good or bad thing, but if we must fund Limpopo, so where do we go in terms of the funding? So the other thing that we did at the MDDA to improve the process of funding and the process of getting the spread in terms of funding was that last year we got the board approved the first grant funding policy of the MDDA. Again, that was to actually strengthen that area because it's core business. The second thing that we did and got the board approved was for us to actually get rid or to eliminate a backlog that we found we were unable to go through. Because if I go back to that backlog, it dated back to 2010, and we just were not sure if some of the applications were valid after they still, are these projects still existing even, have the needs not changed, and so forth. So we eliminated this backlog. And what we then put in place was a new process informed not only by the Act and the regulations, which we think are broad, but that we also had a process that is supported by a policy internally. And so what we did was, in terms of that process, there's a slide that talks to an improved application process. In terms of this process, if you look at the BEN, daily applications, huge backlog worth more than 800 million. And in terms of quantifying the funding to the sector, we've got presentations that say in the 15, 16 years, which exclude last year and this year, we had funded the sector by at least half a billion, 500 million. That's what our presentation says. That's what our statistics and our information tells us. So we are able, Honorable Mackenzie and Honorable Van Damme, quantify year on year where we've been, how much we have funded, and who has defaulted. So in terms of the improved process, again, we now have annual calls. So now we are now in September, we are going to be making a call for applications for normal grants and for applications for Centec. And that ties up with Honorable Maneli's question on what is our relationship with Centec. We actually have got a good working relationship with Centec. We've met over time, I think in the past 2 years, trying to sort out this debt, how do we deal with it, including the DGs from the departments and the ministers have met, and we have come to a conclusion that the debt, that's what at least the board said to the minister of communications then, that the debt does belong to the sector, the community broadcasters. However, there has been in the past, before the DOC was split, there was a line item where money was appropriated by government into the DOC for signal distribution or for them to support the community broadcasters. However, that line item, when that light item was no longer there, we then started struggling with the signal distribution. If I talk about how we're planning to deal with the signal distribution is in as far as sustainability is concerned, we are all of the view and we are in agreement. We've met with Centec, with the minister present, and we are all of the view that it is not sustainable. Centec is not sustainable in as far as the community media is concerned because we rely more on grants. right? And so it means that debt must be funded by someone else, which we're currently doing as the MDDA. But also to note that the debt was about 60 million in February. We then paid 11.8 in May. We also gonna disperse 6.6 million. We then gonna call for it just does not cover their expenses. It just we're really chasing our tails. We're not gonna be able to just settle the 60 million because no one between the department and us and no one has got, and the beneficiaries themselves, no one has got that money. That is the reason why we said during the consultative conference, which we called following a summit that we had in 2018, where we said that we would like to actually look at the challenges of the sector and create long-lasting sustainability strategies. So that consultative conference was to reflect on all these conferences that we've had and to say, now we know what the challenges of the sector, but what are the things that we think we must research, because we could have set as the MDDA and Thumbsucked how we can do the terms of reference ourselves for the sustainability model. But we thought, let's consult the sector, all the relevant stakeholders, government, academia, and so forth. And we actually even had a speaker from UNESCO. We had Professor Guy Berger speaking on media landscape globally at the conference. And he helped us to give us indicators, because what is important is for us to define what does sustainability mean for the community media and small commercial media sector. What are the things that we would have put in place to ensure that this means sustainability? One of my colleagues says to me, she said at Expo, that we need to get to a nitty-gritty that says, how much is to run a station a day, a week, a month? Is it 68,000 a month? And so, in the research that we are going to do in terms of sustainability, we are hoping that, in fact, we would like the report to come back and categorize for us the sector as it is and say, category A is the ones that we say at the MDDA are in the ICU. Why are they in the ICU? It's because they most probably are in geographic areas that have got no potential for economic activity. Because those are the things that we're also going to look at. What is the profile of the province? What is the profile of the district? Who is there in terms of business? How do we get these two partners together? What kind of barter system can take place between these two? We're looking at all those. What are the skills that are required in order for the sector to market itself and sell itself? What are the what numbers do we have in terms of reach in those areas? That is the reason why we've gone to DRC and we'll be sitting in that committee. And then we'll say, category B, we're hoping would be an amber group that can easily go into the green group or go back to the red, depending on what resources we put in place. And then there's a green group that can come to us and say, we would like to run a campaign and please help us with content generation money, and we can do that. But then the focus is on the red and on the yellow to say, what are the resources that each of these categories require? Because, honorable members, I don't believe that we should be, a project in some rural area should be funded or has got similar needs as a project or a broadcaster in like Josie FM, for instance. So I think there is no comparison, and there is no we're trying to custom make the assistance to the sector in accordance with the needs, almost saying this group is unique to this group and this group is unique to this group. So those are the things that we are making. Interactions with NEMISA, Honorable Mackenzie, we've met with NEMISA twice. In fact, we're meeting with NEMISA again next week. Initially, we met with them because of the Competition Commission bursaries, and we wanted them to actually have an intake that we can pay bursaries for, but they could not do that. Now we are coming back and we're meeting about what kind of a collaboration and partnership can we share between ourselves, NEMISA and the MGDA? So that is taking place. We actually have even gone to the MICT CETA, and we've got a draft MOU with them where they are saying they're willing to fund bursaries, but moreover, they're very interested in assisting the community media sector with skills. We've met with the National Development Agency, we've met with the National Lotteries, and so we're trying to pool those resources to say, these are the resources that the team will be ready with the model. that we will unlock for each of these categories then that I'm talking about in terms of their weaknesses, in terms of their strengths, in terms of their ability to sustain, partially sustain, and inability to sustain at all. And then in terms of the multi-choice, I think for me, when I talk about multi-choice in that vein, is the truth. They are our largest funder. So we agreed, we have not signed the contract, but it's in the pipeline. But the contract had expired, a three-year contract had expired in 2018, and last year they committed to giving us 40 million per annum. In fact, they've come back this year and they said they will increase it to 46 million in this financial year. And further opened the door to say that if you want more money, let's motivate for what we want it for and how much we want. We have written back to them, they've acknowledged the receipt of that letter to say, look, we think that the pandemic is going to be staying with us a little bit longer. We are also checking if they will be willing to assist us with signal transmission costs. So those are the things that we're putting to them. And we have told them that we also have got this research that we think is going to be expensive. So we wait on multi-choice on that. But for me, when I speak about my funders, I think without them, we would not be where we are in terms of the work that the MDDA does. And thanks to them. Digitization process, I take your note. I think we take your note, Honorable Mackenzie. And as I've articulated in my presentation, we are in early stages of working on digitizing the sector, including the app that we'd like to develop. Honorable Fandam, when we fund a project, we can tell you how many projects. I think we've funded about 157 projects to date. Needless to say that some have lost their licenses. We can tell you up to the last cent what happened to it. So, if the board approves you for a grant, let's say you wanted a studio, then there's operational costs and there's another equipment like computers and so forth. We give you, so let's say your grant is 2 million. What we don't do is to give you, and remember you would have gone through a very vigorous process to actually then qualify for that grant, in order for you to actually then be approved by the board, that you need to apply on time. Now that we've got calls for applications, it's not a daily thing. You apply, and there's requirements, the documents that you must submit. Let's say now you've been approved for 2 million, broadcast equipment and all. We will give, the first thing that we do is to draft a grantee aid agreement for you. That's the first thing. The second thing is we will come to you. We've done it virtually this year because of the pandemic. We will come to you and take you through, legal unit will take you through the granting aid agreement. What are the expectations? What are the do's? What are the don'ts? So the don'ts are, if we gave you 50,000 rands for a computer, so it's an expensive computer, so it doesn't happen like that. I'm just making an example. Let's say it's for a generator, and you want to take that money and use it for something else. Even if it makes sense for you and you want to use it for solar system, for instance, you must tell us. That's rule number one, that we approved you and each line item has been given money, is allocated. So when you report to us, you must tell us 50,000 for a generator or OB van. What did you do with it? And if you have deviated, it must have been approved by the board or delegated to the CEO in terms of the delegations. There is no time when we do not know what are the projects doing in terms of the money, because we interact with them on a daily basis, especially when they want to take some money and use it for something else, which is allowed within the perimeter. So there's no way when we don't know where the money has gone to. Where the money, so let's say you now have used the money, we give it to you in different tranches. That 2 million may be broken down into three tranches. We give you first tranche, we monitor how you've utilized it, you report to us, you give us reports, you give us receipts, you give us everything that proves to us this is how you must use the money. And then once you qualify, you've gone through that reporting, you qualify for the next tranche, you again utilize the money the way it's intended for, you then again report which through our M&E unit, and then we give you another tranche once you qualify. Where we've got the stalemate and the project is unable to report at all. The Act says, and also it gives powers to the board to write to that project to to rectify. If it can't rectify, we withdraw the funding. That's what the Act says. We withdraw the support. So that those are the things that are in place. In fact, even now, because we now know what we know about some of the things that have happened with the PPEs, we've written back to them to say, with the emergency funding, we would like you to give us even more information on how on the 5,000 rents that we gave you on PPE. Give us the invoices and give us the receipts. How much? How many units? And how much did you pay for each of the units? I'm not sure if I have not covered most of the questions, honourable members.
Chairperson, Chairperson.
Hello,
Mr. Mike is on. Yes, you can hear you.
Okay. Honourable members, both are responsive to questions.
Somebody's mic is on, man. Can you switch it off?
I can't hear Honorable Mlala. You've raised the hand to
Mr. Mulala just indicated that someone's mic was on, but it's off now, Chair. You can go ahead.
Okay. I'm struggling to hear properly. But I was asking honorable members will be able to engage with the agency as part of our oversight work. But I think as they leave the committee, they should be encouraged by the fact that members do appreciate the work that's happening in the MDTA, understanding where the MDTA was, both from the side of governance stability and challenges generally. And that the committee is pleased that they have met us. I think we should also, as a committee, really thank the board, because almost everything that the CEO reports is on the basis that the board would have approved. And we know that board has been in a struggle with the numbers that remain. And we just hope that the four board members that we've recently processed as the committee for approval of the president after parliament they have adopted, that they will also add to this work and really take the agency back to its days of glory. That also means from the point of the Auditor General as well as on the delivery on the ground so that there is support for community media and broadcasting which will take into account radio and TV. And I think from the report they have, we should be worried, especially in provinces where there's still a struggle to have a regional TV channels that would cater for such provinces, and some of them to collapse in the process, and that we should really support them in the partnerships that they seek to build to assist the sector. And with that, honourable members, I think we have moved towards the end of this item. I'll speak to the next item briefly because we're already at 12. We want to thank you, even though board members we have struggled to be connected. I'm sure they are following us in one way or the other. and take note that we do appreciate the commitment they have to get MDDA back on track, as we can see from the presentation. Thanks, Honourable Members, and thanks to MDDA. We will not keep you in the meeting, given that you've presented your item, and we just have a short item for the committee members. It's a way of finishing the performance committee meeting. Thank you, and the board members. Thank you. Honourable Members, having said that, I hope I'm still audible.
Can you please mute your mic?
I'm just paralyzing something and then
excuse me. Can you please mute your mic? Okay. Chairperson, I think you can go ahead.
All right. Honourable Members, as I said, I hope I'm still audible there.
Tim,
yes, you are, Chair.
Okay.
All right. Honourable Members, as I said, we have concluded on that item. So there was an item, there's also an item in relation to adoption of reports. I would want to just give a guidance to the meeting and just test if members would agree with the guidance of the Chair. Going to give to the meeting. Having gone through the report, and I'm sure the members would have also gone through the report that we need to adopt. From the report, there are really corrections to make. I'm saying not just the grammatical question,